नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत भागवतम फोर्थ कैंटो सिक्सटींथ चैप्टर Praise of King Prithu by professional reciters. Text 4. Esha. Translation. This king, Maharaj Prithu, is the best among those who are following religious principles. As such, he will engage everyone in the pursuit of religious principles and give those principles all protection. He will also be a great chastiser to the irreligious and atheists. Please repeat after me. Supported by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, the duty of the king or the head of the government is described very nicely in this verse. It is the duty of the governmental head to see that people strictly follow a religious life. A king also should be strict in chastising the atheists. In other words, an atheistic or godless government should never be supported by a king or governmental chief. That is the taste of good government. In the name of secular government, the king or governmental head, king or governmental head remains neutral and allows people to engage in all sorts of irreligious activities. In such a state, people cannot be happy despite all economic development. However, in this age of Kali, there are no pious kings. Instead, rogues and thieves are elected to be head of the government. But how can the people be happy without religion and... But how can people be happy without religion and God consciousness? The rogues exact taxes from the citizens for their own sense enjoyment. And in the future, the people will be so much harassed that according to Srimad Bhagavatam, they'll flee from their homes and country and take shelters in forest. However, in Kali Yuga, democratic government can be captured by Krishna-conscious people. If this can be done, the general populace can be made very happy. The king of the state or the head of the state is actually like the father of the family. Actually, a state is a family. It's a bigger family. In a smaller family, the father becomes the head of the family, but actually in a state or in a country, the head of the state should be the father, and every citizen in the country should be considered by himself as his own children. The Sanskrit word for citizen is praja. And the word praja is coming from the root word prokrishta rupena jayate. Jayate means born. Prokrishta rupena, very specially born children. They are not actually born out of the father and mother as such for him. Now, he is not born of him and his wife. The citizens are not born of the king and the queen. But by some special arrangement, they have developed a relationship like that of that, like relationship between, like that of between father and his children. So that is the duty of the king. Like the way the father protects his children, the same way the king is supposed to protect his citizens. And that's why a citizen is called praja, prakrishta rupena jayate. And the way the parents are very concerned about the weakest child, the same way the king should be very concerned about the people, those who cannot really take care of themselves. In the Vedic society, that was the custom. The king used to give all kinds of protection, especially to the weak ones. And those who can take care of themselves, the king used to accept their assistance. And those people used to help the king also in all different ways. Making money, administration, helping in administration, and so on and so forth. So that's why Vedic society was a very, very wonderful society. And it used to be very opulent those days. Nowadays, of course, India has become a poor country, but during those days, India was the richest country in the world. We can see that even few years back, if an Englishman wanted to become rich, he used to go to India. It is in order to discover India that Columbus went out and ended up in America. He wanted to find the waterway to India. And that's why when he went to America, when he found the land of America, he thought that he arrived in India. And he thought this was India. And that's why the American aborigines are known as the Indians, American Indians. Later on only, Amerigo Vespucci figured out another sailor. He went to America and he realized that this is not India. And after him, Amerigo, America was named as America. So, we can see that how everybody was eager to have a trade relationship with India. And no one wants to have a trade relationship with a poor country. Everyone wants to have a trade relationship, business relationship with a rich country. And not only that, it was economically opulent, it was culturally, philosophically, spiritually, in all respects India was very, very opulent. In order to receive knowledge from India, the Chinese scholars used to walk across Himalayas. And it's not easy to walk across Himalayas. It's very extremely cold and the journey used to be extremely arduous. Many people used to die in the way. But they were so eager to receive knowledge from India that they used to take that risk. So such a wonderful country has been totally destroyed because they are not following the Vedic culture. India should not be a poor country. India should be a rich country. But because they are not following the Vedic culture, they are losing their opulence. The opulence comes from Lakshmi Devi. Or even if we take it more apparent source of opulence, the opulence comes from nature. And when nature is pleased, nature provides with opulence. And when the nature is displeased, then nature withdraws. Like describing about Prithu Maharaj, the condition of the world during the time of Prithu Maharaj's reign has been described that nature was giving everything in abundance. The fields became full of fruits and vegetables and grains. The cows became full of milk. The mountains became full of gems and minerals, gold and silver. So everywhere there was opulence. And this is a gift of nature. But now that the people in India have rejected Krishna consciousness, that's why nature has withdrawn. And nature is becoming more and more severe for them. Just the other day I heard that there is big drought in India this year. Like somebody told me in Brussels the other day, one Indian man, that he just read in a newspaper from India that this is going to be the worst drought in 100 years. There's never been a drought like that. And drought will lead to famine. There won't be, when there is no rain, there won't be any food grains. So it's, I can see that it's just nature's arrangement. Krishna has given the instruction very, very clearly. Annad bhavanti bhutani, porjannad anna sambhavo, yoggad bhavanti prajanna, yogga karma samudbhava. Human, the living entities survive by eating food. Annad bhavanti bhutani. And food is produced due to rain. Parjannad anna sambhava. Parjanna means rain. Food is produced due to rainfall. And rain comes due to the performance of sacrifice. Yoggad bhavanti parjanna. And so that's why a human being should perform yagya or sacrifice. Now in this age, in the age of Kali, the yagya is sankirtan. Yagya is sankirtana prayoi. But in India people are not accepting this process of sankirtan, yagya or Krishna consciousness. So that's why there is no rain. I mean, it's actually a science. Everything falls into the right slots. Right, the understanding is very clear. Anybody who read Bhagavad Gita knows why there is a drought in India. And I think Krishna is preparing the field for Krishna consciousness now. Maya is smashing them. Material nature is smashing them. All their opulences have been withdrawn. And now they don't have any food to eat. And I think that's the time that we should go out and preach. Chant Hare Krishna and rain will automatically come. And then when the rain falls, they'll say it's a miracle. And then they will take to Krishna consciousness. They want to see some miracle. Otherwise they won't accept it. So I was actually, when I heard that, I was quite enlivened. That let them suffer. Actually nature is smashing them. Like a teacher smashes or beats up a disobedient student. So nature is trying to teach them a lesson by punishing them this way. But Prabhupada said that ultimately everything will be good for Krishna consciousness. And if India take to Krishna consciousness, then everything will flourish there, and automatically the whole world will take to Krishna, or at least receive Krishna consciousness more seriously. Nowadays the world is not taking Krishna consciousness that seriously because the Indians are not taking it seriously. In the West especially, I noticed people say, well, yeah, I spoke to Mr. So-and-so, and he said that this is another way of Hindu culture. The Sankirtan movement is one branch of Hindu culture. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a prophet, like Sai Baba or so and so forth. Such rascals. And when they hear things like that from Indians, they take it for granted. They think, well, he's an Indian, he knows. But little does he realize that these Indians are not at all Indians. They're just a bunch of rascals without any understanding whatsoever. And we can see that how bad the leadership is. It's all because of the bad leadership. If the leader is good, then he will direct them towards Krishna consciousness. But when the leaders are rogues and rascals, when the leaders are demoniac, then they will teach people, teach the citizens, how not to accept Krishna. And that's exactly what is happening. In the name of secularism, they are preaching atheism. They're saying that we are secular state. We do not support anybody, any religious faith. And it's very, when I think of that, I feel very disturbed. Because those people are so demoniac, and it's so apparent that how demoniac they are. Like, last time I was in India, I met some big government official requesting him to give permission for some Western devotees to stay in India permanently. Not many, just 50. So the 50 devotees can stay in India permanently. And then his answer was, we can't, because ours is a secular state, and if we give you that facility, then they will say that we are being partial to the Hindus. And then the Christians will ask for that same favor, Muslims will ask for the same favor, and so on and so forth. And I felt so upset. I just told him, don't you have any discrimination? Can't you figure out who is a friend and who is an enemy? And these people are trying to help India, and you are rejecting them without even considering, without even trying to find out what they are actually here for. Anyway, that's why they are suffering, and now they'll die in thousands and millions, and then probably their eyes will open. And if then their eyes don't open, then there'll be a war. The war is imminent. If they don't take to Krishna consciousness, there'll be a war. Prabhupada himself predicted that if there is a third world war, it will start from India, between India and Pakistan. And then it will spread all over the world, and India will have the worst of it. It will be smashed into pieces. And it's natural. If you don't take to Krishna, if they don't take to Krishna consciousness, Krishna will smash you. But if they take to Krishna consciousness, then I can see that India will become the most glorious country in the world. Anyway, we are not concerned. We are not attached to any particular country or land. We are simply attached to Krishna. Wherever Krishna consciousness spreads, we are attached to those places. And wherever people reject Krishna, we reject them like plague. And here it says, actually Prabhupada is quoting from Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto, description of the age of Kali. It says, the rogues exact taxes from the citizens for their own sense enjoyment. And in the future, the people will be so much harassed that according to Srimad Bhagavatam, they'll flee from their homes and country and take shelter in the forest. So the only solution is Krishna consciousness, and otherwise there is no hope for this world, no hope for this age of Kali. And of course we have to have the conviction, the faith, that Krishna consciousness will spread for 10,000 years. Mahaprabhu It has been predicted, at least Prabhupada said, that for 10,000 years after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance, there will be golden age re-established in the middle of the age of Kali. So it is guaranteed that it will happen. So with that faith, we must push on. The way Prabhupada had faith in Krishna's prediction that the holy name would spread in every town and village, and he simply acted on that conviction. The same way, we should have the full faith and conviction that the golden age will be established for 10,000 years, and we must push on with that objective. Let us try to establish the golden age. And how the golden age can be established? By the Sankirtan movement. Devotees should not be too concerned about their maintenance. That is, Maya always takes care of that. Material nature takes care of that. Actually, Maya means material nature. When somebody becomes a devotee of Krishna, material nature provides him with everything that he needs. Mahamaya, Durga, another name for Durga is Annada. Anna means, everyone knows, Anna means food. And Da means the giver. She is the giver of food. And she is also, another name for her, another name of Durga is also Annapurna. She is full of food grains. She is full of food stuff. So why should we worry about food? And another example about that is that Lord Shiva is the husband of Durga. And Durga is Annapurna. But Lord Shiva is going out with a begging bowl. Right? So it's a paradox. Like, his wife is the giver of all the food grains and all the opulence, but Lord Shiva is begging. Why? Because he's a devotee. Vaishnavanam jathasambhu. Lord Shiva is a devotee, so he doesn't care about how much Annapurna, his wife, has. And he begs, why? Because he goes from door to door to give them Krishna consciousness. It's not that he needs food or money. He is Ashutosh. He is fully satisfied. But he goes, devotee goes from door to door just to give people Krishna consciousness. If we go to people as a king, then people will not be able to listen to us. They'll automatically become envious. But if we go to people as beggars, then they'll take compassion on us. And they'll say, this man is worse off than I am. I am better off than him. And then if you give them Krishna consciousness, he will feel more relaxed. And also when you become too opulent, when our mood is too opulent, then we also tend to become arrogant. So devotee, he maintains a very humble mood. Devotee doesn't need anything. Devotee has everything. Prabhupada so often said, just push on Krishna consciousness movement and everything will come. A wonderful example regarding that is Srivash Thakur. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave Srivash Thakur and his brothers the instruction to chant Hare Krishna all the time. And they had, with big wampas, they used to have huge kirtan. And it's actually because of their kirtan that the Brahmins of Mayapur reported to Chand Kazi. They could sleep at night. They became very, very upset. And so they went to the Chand Kazi and begged him to stop them. And Chadkazi went and broke the mridanga and told them to stop Sankirtan. And this Srivash Thakur when he was ordered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to chant the holy name all the time, so he questioned Mahaprabhu, then how shall I maintain my family? And Mahaprabhu said, don't worry, I'll take care of that. And they say that food used to come flying into the house. Another example is Mrigari. When Narad Muni told him to give up hunting, Mrigari asked Narad Muni, if I stop hunting, then how shall I survive? Narad Muni said, don't worry, I'll take care of that. And Mrigari used to have so much food coming to him that he started a food distribution program, food relief program. So devotees don't have to worry about maintenance. Money will come, everything will come. If we serve Krishna, and if we believe that Krishna is God, then I think we at least have to have this much of faith that Krishna will provide, Lakshmi Devi will provide. But if we don't have faith, but try to get Lakshmi, then Lakshmi will become Maya, and will be the cause of our fall down. We must remember, in the past, many devotees actually fell down because of acquiring Lakshmi without Krishna. So we are not concerned so much about Lakshmi, but we are concerned about Krishna. So when you become concerned, when you serve Krishna, then Lakshmi automatically comes. We have such a wonderful example, Prabhupada. He went to America with 40 rupees. 40 rupees is how much? Those days it was only about $6. And Prabhupada went without any support, without any help, and started Krishna consciousness. And in 10 years' time, Prabhupada built 108 temples all over the world. And Prabhupada said he didn't even cash that 40 rupees. So that's how Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness. If we become serious about our spiritual life, money will come. Just the other day, Rohini Sutta Prabhu was telling me that Frank Sinatra met the Pope and confessed to the Pope. Oh, he wants to. Oh, I see. Oh, he died. Oh, I see. So, he wanted to confess to the Pope, and as his fees, he volunteered to pay him $250 million. So, if people are volunteering to pay $250 million to a person like Pope, who cannot really help him? So what to talk about if we spread Krishna consciousness, the genuine religious principle, all over the world? Then at least I can say that money will come flying. Anyway, I'm sure you all are aware of this fact. Prabhupada has mentioned this point time and time again in the books. And all we need is Krishna consciousness. If we become Krishna conscious, then Krishna will give us everything. So thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. And I will request you all to please take this process of Krishna consciousness very seriously. Keep on endeavoring in a spirit of unity. That is very, very important. Prabhupada, time and time again, Prabhupada reminded us,
your love for me will be shown, how you cooperate with each other. Actually, when we can't cooperate with each other, then we must understand that there is some defect, some fault. And where does this fault, where does any fault spring from? that stops us from becoming Krishna conscious. And that is our false ego. Krishna consciousness means Krishna conscious, becoming conscious of Krishna. And false ego means becoming self-conscious. Instead of becoming conscious of Krishna, when you become conscious of ourselves, then it is false ego, then it is Maya. Because false ego is the first thing in the material platform, the first layer of material nature. When you fall down, false ego is the first thing that covers us. So if we want to get out of this material bondage, then false ego is the thing that we have to become free from. So we should be concerned, be careful, not to become too much affected by our false ego. Let us cooperate. After all, we don't have anything to gain in this material platform. The only thing that we have to gain is Krishna. Devotional service to Krishna. And everything else is secondary. Everything else is, especially if it is detrimental to Krishna consciousness, then it should be rejected. So with that spirit, we should carry on cooperating. Because when we cooperate, then we produce a tremendous power. If we are alone, then we are weak. But when we are together as a group, then we are very, very strong, very, very powerful. And then no one can do it. Maya cannot do anything to us. So that's why Prabhupada emphatically reminded us of cooperating with each other. And never leave ISKCON. There may be some trouble, maybe some problems, maybe some conflicts of interest. But no matter whatever happens, never leave ISKCON. And I thank you all again and again that you all been very kind to me, gave me a wonderful association, and I will look forward to see you all again. Hare Krishna. Yes. Does anybody have any question? Yeah, it's because, you see, the land India is a dharma kshetra. And Prabhupada is saying that in dharma kshetra, when you do some pious activities, then the result is multiplied by 1,000 times. And when you do some impious activity, sinful activity, then also the result is multiplied by 1,000 times. Now when in India people are becoming sinful, the result actually of their sins are multiplied by thousands of times. And that's why they're suffering. That's why the reaction is so intense. Whereas in the West, although they're even more sinful than the Indians, but the result is not that bad. They still have some opulence. But actually ultimately this so-called opulence will become the cause of their suffering. What is their opulence in the West? It's only industrial development. And if there is some crisis, they won't be able to eat their products of the industry. As Prabhupada used to say, they can't eat nuts and bolts.
And not only that, if there is some crisis, it'll hit the West so bad. Like, can you imagine if there is no electricity in the middle of winter? You know, if in the West, you know, most of the food is actually imported now because of good transporting system. The food is imported from different countries, different corners of the world. You get kiwi fruits from New Zealand and pineapples from Singapore and all kinds of things coming from all over the world. But if there is a war and there is no supply, then there's going to be a big crisis for food. And at least in countries like India, people are getting used to the crisis gradually. Like in Calcutta, people become used to, you know, they call it load shedding, right? No electricity for hours together, right? Everything comes to a standstill, right? But life still goes on. But in the West, people cannot tolerate it if it happens. And it actually happened in New York in 67, I think. There was some electric failure in New York City, and everything just went berserk. The crime rate increased by about 100 times, and, you know, looting, all kinds of things were going on. And then after that, because there was no drainage system working due to a lack of electricity, the whole coast became full of stool. All the piling up stool for so many, only for 3 days or so. And not only that, when the machine started to work, then instead of clearing the garbage, they started splashing the garbage in. You know, all kinds of crazy things were happening at that time. And we can see there's so much, they're depending so much on electricity and other artificial things. Like, can you imagine? I mean, if there's no electricity, and all of a sudden if there's no electricity and the whole, you know, like, say you're in the middle of a tunnel, you know, in an underground train, what's going to happen? How are you going to climb Empire State Building or World Trade Center, right? 140 stories. So apparently it seems that everything is so nice in the West, but actually Maya has his plan, or her plan. Ramananda raised his hand before. Well, I'll try to come back around 20th of December for the Christmas marathon. But original plan was to come during the middle of January. Because in Calcutta also we have Christmas marathon. So. You go longer. Also, another consideration, of course, I had is, like, if the situation in India is so bad, like if there is a big famine, and then probably I'll stay there and start. No, stay there, and I think that will be wonderful for preaching. You can go out and tell them, chant Hare Krishna, and, you know, like, we can have nationwide Sankirtan, Harinam, you know. And also, this is a good time to distribute food. So I have to, anyway, my tentative plan is to come back around 20th of January.
I'm sorry, 20th of December. Rida Chaitanya Prabhu is actually pushing me to come back. Purna Tattva Prabhu? Yes. Yeah. So too much of everything is bad. There's a nice shloka regarding that. It says, Oti darpe hata lanka, oti mane cha kauravam, oti dane balirvadha, sharvam attanta garhitam. Says, due to excessive pride, Lanka was destroyed. Lanka was the capital of Ravana. Ravana was extremely proud. So due to his excessive pride, Lanka was destroyed. Oti mane cha kaurava, due to excessive vanity, man, you can say honor, due to excessive honor or excessive vanity, the Kauravas were destroyed, Mahabharata. Duryodhana and his brothers were destroyed. Oti dane bolirbadh, due to excessive charity, Bali was bound. Right? So, excess of anything is bad. So that should be rejected. So excess of water also is bad. Then there's a flood. Right? And also rain, what, actually they're not depending on rain for their food. Right? Not locally at least. They're with the rain, what they're growing. Although there is rain in the west, but they're just growing corn to feed the cows and so that they can eat their flesh. That is... And here it rains even in the middle of the ocean, although there is no sacrifice. Right? But in the West, soon people will realize the reaction of not performing sacrifice. Probably they won't, here there won't be the lack of rain, but there will be excess of fire. When a war breaks out, it will be fire everywhere, right? So... People, those who are not performing sacrifice, they are in a very, very dangerous situation. And those who are performing sacrifice, they are fine. They are happy when they are alive, and they will become even, they will become ecstatic when they leave their body. So for a devotee, it's all auspicious. I couldn't get the question. There are a few ways, there are some ways of doing it. One thing is that when you feel that false ego or Maya is attacking you, just pick up Prabhupada's book and start reading. Open anywhere and start reading. And that will immediately pacify your mind. Right? And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that you beat the mind with brooms and sometimes with your shoes. So mind is a very nasty thing. So to control the mind, you have to be very strict with the mind. And if nothing works, then just start chanting Hare Krishna loudly, as loud as possible. So we have to conquer our negative feelings by positive Krishna consciousness. If we become Krishna conscious, then there won't be any problem. And if you become Krishna conscious, then all problems will be solved. Yes.
When you go second time into your dress and letters, and people tend to think that I think it's not just practice, and then when you dress as nicely, you decide that you tend to become envious. So, what is actually the desire to hear the lesson?
Yeah. Do they think that when you wear sari, do they think that they are hippies? Because I never seen hippies wearing saris. So wear a nice sari. Nice silk sari. And they won't become envious, because sari they can't relate to. If you're a nice gown or a fur coat, then they'll get envious. But when you wear a nice sari, sari actually is very dignified for ladies. And it's very opulent also, silk saris. And another thing is, you see, had we been going out for last 20 years in saris and dhotis, then people would have accepted us. But since last 10 years, we stopped going out in dhotis and saris. That's why, you know, people cannot relate to that. You know, they don't see us so much. If they saw people in sari, but they're very nice people, then they would immediately think that anybody who wears a sari is a nice person. So, actually, these are external. The first impression is what should we talk about tonight? Should we have it just question answer? No. So what should be the class about then? Didn't you speak enough this morning about Radharani? Actually, of course, one cannot speak enough about Radharani. Radharani is actually the ultimate in charge of all living entities. And
she feels very bad for the living entities, those who go away from Krishna consciousness. Originally, all the living entities are meant for Krishna's pleasure. All the living entities are supposed to give pleasure to Krishna. And Radharani is in charge of this pleasure to Krishna. So, living entities are actually serving Krishna under the care of Radharani. So, when the living entities go away from Krishna consciousness, or when the living entities leave the spiritual sky, Radharani especially feels very bad for them. And that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he came in the mood of Radharani, he was so magnanimous. Krishna himself is not so merciful. Although Krishna is the most merciful, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but Radharani is even more merciful than Krishna. And that's why when Krishna comes in the mood of Radharani, he is most magnanimous. So, when we try to render service to Krishna, Radharani becomes very pleased. She helps the living entities, and she is actually the supreme reservoir of devotional service. So today, it's Radharani's appearance day, and we must understand that she came to this earth planet on this auspicious day, and by appearing here, she blessed this earth planet. That's what has been described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that why this earth planet is so fortunate. Of all the three planetary systems, upper, middle and lower planetary systems, earth planet is most specially blessed because Radha Krishna appeared here. When Radharani appeared on this earth planet became specially blessed. And living entities, those who accept that benediction of Radharani's appearance on this planet, they are also very, very fortunate. So on this day, the day, auspicious day when she appeared, we must make it a point to dedicate ourselves in serving Srimati Radharani. The desire for devotees is just to become a servant of Radharani. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, Dhamer Sharup Sphuribe Nayone Hoibo Radharo Dashi. When I will be able to perceive the real form of the Dham, the abode of Krishna, and when shall I become a maidservant of Srimati Radharani? Hoibo Radharu Dashi. Actually, it's a very, very profound subject. To talk about Radharani is very, very profound, and we actually have to be very careful also that we do not misunderstand by any chance the position of Radharani. We should never, even in our remotest dream, consider Radharani to be an ordinary person, an ordinary female, and Krishna, an ordinary male. We have to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Radharani is Krishna's eternal consort. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and Radharani is his eternal consort. And if we analyze the position of Radharani, then we can look at it this way, that Radharani first expands as Rukmini. I'm sorry, not Radharani is not Rukmini. Chandravali is Rukmini, and Radharani is Satyabhama, a queen of Krishna in Dwarka. Krishna expands himself, first as Balaram, and then from Balaram there is that Adi Chaturbhuha, Vasudev Shankarshan Pradyumna Aniruddha. Vasudev is Krishna in Dwarka. Krishna in Dwarka is Vasudev. And Shankarshan, Pradyumna and Aniruddha. This is called Chaturbhuha. And there Krishna is married to his eternal consorts. In Vrindavan there are 16,000 gopis, and in Dwarka they have become 16,000 queens. So they expanded. As Krishna expands, Krishna's potency, Radharani also expands. Then Krishna becomes Narayan. Then from this Rukmini or Satyabhama, the expansion of the Lakshmis, Mahalakshmis. And then there are different Vishnu incarnations, and they expand further as Lakshmis. Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and Karanodakshay Vishnu. Kshirodakshay Vishnu. And then this Vishnu glances at Maya. And by his glance, this material nature is created. Just Vishnu glances at Maya, and the material universe or material nature is created. So we can see that how inconceivable is the position of Srimati Radharani, and how inconceivable is the dealings between Radha and Krishna. If by Mahavishnu's glancing at Maya, the whole creation become manifest, then can we possibly understand what it means when Krishna glances at Radharani? It is impossible for us. Mahavishnu is an expansion of the expansion of the expansion of Krishna. And that Mahavishnu's glance towards Maya is the cause of the creation of this material nature. So we have to understand that how inconceivable it is to understand the dealings between Krishna and Srimati Radharani. We do not know what it means when Krishna glances at Radharani. What to talk about when they're dancing and their other exchanges, they're talking, they're singing together. Sometimes Radharani steals Krishna's flute. Sometimes Radharani gets angry with Krishna. It is actually impossible for us to understand. That's why Prabhupada actually did not speak much about Radha Krishna, because Prabhupada knew that we are not qualified to understand. Of course, this morning I spoke quite a lot about Radharani. But then later on I was thinking whether I'm qualified to speak like that. It is a matter of understanding her position and praying for her mercy. And we also must understand that this is a kind of a principle, this is a topic that cannot really be conceived by our material intelligence and cannot also properly be expressed in mundane words. Only with our devotion can we possibly understand her position, understand her. So, I would request everyone to not to take her position lightly. There's not just some stories that that pleases our intellect or mind. It's not just some stories or just some happenings. These happenings are undoubtedly true. They're actually absolute truth. And they have a very, very profound purport, a profound underlying meaning that cannot be conceived or cannot be understood by material intelligence. It has to be understood by spiritual intelligence or devotional service. Someday, maybe, there'll be a revelation of these facts in our hearts when the heart gets totally purified. Until then, let us keep on endeavoring, keep on trying to become her servant. Keep on trying to just somehow render some service under Srila Prabhupada's guidance, in the Society for Krishna Consciousness. That is what actually counts. Our attachment to ISKCON, our attachment to Srila Prabhupada, our attachment to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that is what counts. And then, this other elevated spiritual realizations will automatically dawn in our hearts. Regarding that, there is a very nice shloka by Prabodhananda Saraswati. Says, Jatha jatha gaura padaro binde kriyeto bhakti kritopunja rashi tatha tathut sarpati ridi akushmat radha padam bhojo sudhambho rashi jatha jatha gaura padaro binde kriyeto bhakti kritopunja rashi. As we develop our attachment to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. Tatha tathut sarpati ridi akashmat. All of a sudden, then, we find in our heart that the mercy or the nectar of Krishna consciousness is inundating our heart, springing from the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. A flood or flow of nectar of Krishna consciousness is emanating from Radharani's lotus feet and inundating our hearts. So we can see that we cannot actually directly approach Radha Krishna. But as we approach Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that approach ultimately is transformed into devotional service to Radha Krishna and mercy, special mercy of Srimati Radharani. And for us, it is not even, we cannot even approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prabodhananda Saraswati was an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so he could say, Jatha Jatha Gaura Padaravinde Kriyato Bhakti Krita Punja Rashi. He could develop direct attachment to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was an eternal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But we are so far removed from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But in our case, Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet is there, and the manifestation of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet is this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And as we develop our attachment to this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, to that extent we will develop our love for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And to that degree, all of a sudden we will see that Radharani's mercy is inundating our hearts. Krishna consciousness is a science. It is not sentiment, nor it is blind faith. It is a science, and as we follow the course, as we practice it properly, then it bears appropriate results. And as we practice Krishna consciousness under proper guidance, according to proper instructions, then according to that degree, we develop our attachment to Mahaprabhu and Radha Krishna. We must be very, very thankful to Krishna, to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to Srimati Radharani, to Prabhupada, to all the devotees, that we are in ISKCON today. I emphasize this point very much because with the passing of days, I'm realizing the importance of this society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, actually is the only hope for this world. And if we positively or effectively render service to this society or through this society, accordingly we will make our advancement in spiritual life. It's never going to go in vain. Anybody who is in ISKCON, rendering service through ISKCON to Krishna consciousness, is never going to be a loser. We lose only when we leave. And we must also be very careful that Maya is very vigilant. Maya is watching us. And Maya knows our weaknesses. And Maya's business is to take us away from Krishna consciousness. Not exactly to take us away from Krishna consciousness. Maya's business is to see that how sincerely we are trying to become connected to Krishna consciousness. How sincere we are, that's what Maya wants to see. And from time to time, Maya will test us. And if we are not sincere, then we will fail, and then we'll fall. So we should be very, very careful not to deviate from Krishna consciousness, not to harbor any other desire besides serving Prabhupada and ISKCON. One big maya is also to think that we can serve Krishna without Prabhupada and without ISKCON. But that's a very, very big maya. Nobody can serve Krishna without Prabhupada's mercy. Actually, recently I had a very interesting discussion. Some people were asking me that Prabhupada's godbrothers, they are also devotees. So if some devotees go and join them, then they are also rendering service to Krishna. By Krishna's mercy, the answer came right on tip of my tongue. And the answer was that Mahaprabhu's mercy is flowing through the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Mahaprabhu predicted that the holy name will spread in every town and village all over the world. And this is a thing that Mahaprabhu himself did not do. He kept it to be fulfilled by somebody. And then, although apparently it was impossible, even the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to think that it was a poetic exaggeration. Now, how can the holy names, how can Krishna consciousness spread in every town and village all over the world? But it happened. And we have to understand that it didn't happen by chance. Mahaprabhu predicted, and when it happened, we have to understand that it happened by Mahaprabhu's arrangements. And Mahaprabhu sent his most dear associate to accomplish that mission. So Mahaprabhu's mercy is actually flowing through this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Now, anybody who wants to be connected to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu must, or if I don't want to use the word must, at least I can say should have joined ISKCON. If they were sincere about serving the Sankirtan movement, should have joined ISKCON. But those who did not, they are not actually sincere about their spiritual life. They are not sincerely trying to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Why? Because of their false ego. They can't join because of their pride. So, at least according to my understanding, they are asar. They are not effective. Their devotional service is dry. Don't we often say that, at least I do, that if Jesus Christ was here today, then he would have joined ISKCON. Yes. Why do you say that? Because we know that Jesus was sincere about spreading the love of God. And ISKCON is a society that is actually a wonderful platform to spread the love of God all over the world. So knowing very well that Jesus is sincere about that, that's why he would have joined ISKCON. So Why not the Gaudiya Vaishnavas? Why not Prabhupada's godbrothers? Why not other followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? So this analysis came very clearly to my mind, and I very strongly believe that it's true. So if somebody joins some other group, other temple outside of ISKCON, that's all right. But for ISKCON devotees to leave ISKCON and join somebody else is very, very unfortunate. It is Maya. It's very important to understand how fortunate we are just by being a part of this ISKCON movement. And I also very strongly believe that if we can spend this life in ISKCON, as a part of ISKCON, somehow or other, like it or don't like it, if somehow or other we stick to ISKCON, that then at the end of this life we'll go back to Godhead. Prabhupada said that actually. Prabhupada said, if you remain in ISKCON following the four regulative principles and chanting 16 rounds a day, I guarantee that you all will go back to Godhead. So it's such an easy thing just to remain in ISKCON. And if we remain in ISKCON, then it becomes so easy to follow the regulative principles. Just the association of devotees protect us from falling down. Maya is, of course, very strong. But the association of devotees is stronger. And if we remain in the association of devotees, do not commit offenses to the devotees, remain favorably disposed to the other devotees around us, then Maya won't be able to touch us. And chanting 16 rounds, of course, is a must. We should never disregard that instruction of Prabhupada. And then just one lifetime is so short a span. 20, 30, 40, 50 years. It'll just fly and the time will fly. 50, 60 years will just fly in no time. And then, just because of that we remained in ISKCON, sincerely served the mission, following the instructions of Prabhupada, following the regulative principles and chanting 16 rounds at least, then at the end of this life, we'll be promoted to Vrindavan or Navadvip. So why not just offer this life to ISKCON? That's what Prabhupada told me also in one of the first meetings I had with Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, many, many lifetimes you have tried to enjoy, but this life you just offered to Krishna. And he said, just offer it to Krishna and go back to Godhead. It's so easy. By Prabhupada's mercy, it has become so easy. We can enjoy our life when we are alive in this planet by being a part of ISKCON. And then, at the end of this life, we'll go back to Godhead and enjoy there. So, it's a wonderful condition. We enjoy when we are here, and then at the end of this life, we enjoy there. Little bit of austerities are there, but actually they are not austerities. It is good. To follow the four regulative principles is actually not an austerity. Any intelligent man will admit that it is actually bliss. To follow the four regulative principles is very blissful. So it's not austerities. Actually, there is no austerity in Krishna consciousness. Yesterday Jai Gopal Prabhu was telling, like, observing the Ekadasi, the next morning, fasting the whole day and staying up the whole night, and next morning you feel as if you can fly. So, who would not, and actually it is so nice even to fast. It's so nice even to stay up the whole night. So in Krishna, although apparently karmis would think that, or outsiders would think, oh, it's so austere. But actually it is bliss. The karmis think to sleep on the floor is so austere. But I feel that to sleep in a soft bed is austere. Because I can't sleep. Sometimes when we are invited to stay in some life member's house or some friend's house, then I make it a point. I pull out the bed, make it on the floor, and just sleep. And they can't understand why I do that. And I tell them that I can't sleep in that soft bed. And actually hard bed is good for our back and for our body, for our sleep. Getting up in the morning, taking a bath, people think that it's so austere. But we know it's bliss. So, whatever we do in Krishna consciousness is extremely joyful. early days when Prabhupada just started the center in 26 Second Avenue. Once Prabhupada got Kirtananda Maharaj to give a lecture in a Sunday feast. And Kirtananda Maharaj mentioned in the lecture that in Krishna consciousness is so wonderful. You enjoy Krishna prasad, you chant, you sing, enjoy, and dance in ecstasy. And you render a little service, and you do a little work. Prabhupada stopped him. He says, no. In Krishna consciousness, there is no work. And then Prabhupada explained the difference between work and service. When you do something with love, it is service. It's an expression of our love. But work is something that is forced upon somebody, that we do not want to do, but we have to do it because we are forced. The people outside, they work. And they work not for the love of their work, or not for the love of their boss. They work because at the end of the week they get the money. And if somebody says, well, I can't pay you anymore, then they'll say, okay, goodbye. I'm not coming back from tomorrow. So people there, they don't know what spontaneous service is. So they're working like an ass. But we do not work, we enjoy. Whatever we do is joyful. We go out distributing books, it's joyful. We go out in Harinam, it's joyful. We cook in the kitchen, it's joyful. We wash the pots for Krishna, it's joyful. Everything is joyful. And our life in Krishna consciousness is an eternal holiday. We are in a never-ending vacation. And that's why we don't need any holidays. Our holiday is... Actually, we don't have any holiday. Everything is service. Our holiday, the only holiday we can think of is going to India for Mayapur festival. But that's not a holiday. That's a, I mean, actually, how can there be a holiday when the whole thing is a holiday? Actually, ours is a real holy day. Because everything about Krishna consciousness is holy. So thank you all very much. I really, it's so nice to be with you all. And actually when I was away, I was thinking when I was going to come back. And anyway, so I'm sure we will be together in separation through our service to Krishna, to Prabhupada, to ISKCON. Hare Krishna. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Srimati Radharani. All glories to Radha Gopinath ji.